All right, let's get some levels here. This one's good. Where are you guys at?
I'm going to bring an actual level in one of these times just to mess with him. Like, no, this isn't straight.
Is the table level today? How are we looking?
Everything's looking good.
Everything's looking good?
You guys.
Sounding good?
Do we sound? As long as we don't sound any worse than normal.
Okay.
I think we'll be all right.
Everything won't be irate.
All right. Yes. Well, the official warm-up lap, since we're warming up our bellies.
Yeah.
For audio listeners that are bourbon fans, what are we drinking tonight?
I've got an E.H. Taylor single barrel that you have so kindly offered to me, and it is delectable.
Yes.
Delicious.
And you brought an 11-year Lagavulin.
Yes.
Aged in
Guinness casks.
Yes.
This is the Offerman edition from, I think, 2 years ago, maybe three at this point. I still have a little bit left, so I'm trying to clean house on the whiskey a little bit and kill some bottles. See, I talked right. See, this is professional stuff going on here, Ethan. I just kept rolling as Doug was struggling for his life for a second.
Do you guys get irritated when it's very clear you're about to sneeze? And while you're like working it out, like you're just doing, the person with you is like, bless you, before you actually sneeze?
I've never had it happen in my entire life. That was the first time ever.
That, we captured it here on audio.
That irritates me to no end. That is one of the worst things you can do to a person, as far as I'm concerned.
I'm pretty sure there's other worse things, like maybe stabbing them.
Name another one.
No, the worst thing is having the sneeze die.
That's
terrible.
That's terrible.
Yeah,
that's
love like sneezing.
You get like blue-nosed or something. It's just...
Well, on that note, welcome back to Switchcast Season 5. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt. Tyler Sanders is my co-host.
Hello.
We are the automotive news and entertainment show that's not just for car people, as you have just experienced.
We're for sneeze people. We're talking about sneezes and whiskey.
Ethan Huffnagel is over here encouraging sneezing, and he is also the executive assistant to the regional producer.
That's a new one.
No, it isn't, actually. I wrote that down multiple episodes ago. Some say... And we're not talking about the steak here. Some say that revenge is a dish best served cold. Well, we believe that. So is the news. We are never the first on scene. Sometimes we're the last. Sometimes we're years late. But
there's a tumbleweed going through the scene, and we're just showing up to talk about it.
We bring the extra sauce here. And sometimes being late is better because we have additional information. And tonight is no exception. We are, of course, by popular demand, talking about Carvana. There was an incredible article that dropped, or report, or whatever you want to call it, by Hindenburg Research, a noted short seller of various stocks, Carvana included. And boy, did we get barraged with messages to see our opinion on that.
Discuss.
We've been talking about Carvana a long time. I have been quote unquote betting against Carvana, not officially, full disclosure. I have never knowingly held any positions in Carvana, positive or negative, short selling stocks, whatever. I don't know. I might own a mutual fund that holds them. I really hope not. But full disclosure, everything I say here is purely an opinion from expertise in the car business, selling far less cars than Carvana. So maybe it's not even expertise. It's just pontificating. But anyway.
Hopefully it's very obvious that I also don't hold a stake in Carvana because I should have a long time ago, but that ship has sailed.
Yes, we have listeners who have made a fortune both off of shorting Carvana and on not shorting Carvana, buying them when they were $4 a share.
Gosh.
But anyway, everybody was in a rush to, of course, report on this report right off the bat. Everybody ran to the news outlets, whatever, to the presses. However, it's good that we didn't, because there's some information that has come to light that gives additional context to this report. But first of all, let's dig into this report. Hindenburg Research, interviewed 49 different people, previous employees of Carvana, competitors, banks who deal with Carvana, et cetera, did a pretty extensive deep dive into their financials, their history, some of the insider deals, or what appear to be insider deals. And one comment actually on Facebook, there was a writer for Bloomberg that said, we were doing the same research project and you guys just beat us to the punch.
Oh, no way.
So implying essentially that they were coming to the same conclusion. So this is, I would say Bloomberg is probably more neutral. Hindenburg disclosed that they have a extensive short position in Carvana. So like, I mean, they legally have to disclose that, but obviously, there is bias in this article. However, I don't think they would have taken a short position if they didn't actually believe what they put in here. All that to say, we're not the experts here. We're going to quote what we've learned from this article and give our opinion on it based off of what we've learned over the years in watching Carvana and give our opinion. This is an opinion. This is not a recommendation to buy or not buy Carvana stock or to short or not short them. This is just pontificating here. We are talking heads, as we've been accused of being by our critics. That is accurate.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a compliment, I think. Mission accomplished.
Somebody said, well, you don't put up enough pictures. I'm like, we're a podcast.
You shouldn't even be watching. I mean, you can watch. I'm very happy you watch, but you can just listen. That's kind of the point.
Yes. Yes. So anyway, HindenburgResearch.com/Carvana is the breakdown of this research project, but a broad flyover is, they're essentially one of the allegations is their main allegation is that their turnaround is a mirage, that their, rise from almost bankruptcy to massive profitability was fake, that they're not reporting their profits correctly. Now, that's always something I kind of in the back of my mind thought maybe was true, because I'm looking at their profit numbers going, this doesn't make sense, but I'm not an M&A guy, I'm not a financial analyst, so I'm just going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say, wow, their turnaround actually worked. But boy, is it suspect when, according to this report, Ernest Garcia II, the father of the CEO, who... this is important, cannot be employed by any publicly traded company because of previous conviction of fraud, not just allegations, but a conviction. He has made billions of dollars off of well-timed sale of Carvana stock. So, right, that right there is a huge red flag to me. He sold, I believe, $2.1 billion. I'm not in the right place in this article, but at one point when Carvana stock was at its high, its previous high, he sold a couple billion dollars worth of stock. B, billion with a B.
Casual couple bills.
Shortly after that, their stock tanked by 99%. 99%.
Yeah. If you look at the chart of the stock price over the past few years, it's kind of wild.
Right, right. And then later on, when Carvana reported their Q1 2023 earnings, showing a 41% year-over-year decline in loan sales, which basically, you know, was a whole bunch of red flags, the CEO, Ernie Garcia III, blamed the delayed loan sales and, quote, uncertainties in the securitization market. With the stock price depressed, the Garcias signed an agreement to purchase $126 million in Carvana stock on July 17th, 2023. 2 days later, Carvana announced the best quarter in company history. 2 days later, and they were up $427 million just on that purchase of stock. So just some timely reporting of losses or profits net them almost $500 million personally, right? This is just reporting, and this is what's all in this research paper is essentially they are just fudging the numbers here and there, timing things, because you can move numbers from quarter to quarter. Or you can move numbers from company to company, which also is alleged in here, that there's a bunch of related companies, including DriveTime, which is, I believe, Ernie Garcia II's company. They're selling loans and selling wholesale vehicles in the hundreds of millions to this other company. And it's like, oh, and warranties too at like full boat retail. So anyway, they're alleging that the reporting of profit is sketchy at best. The other thing they're alleging is essentially the same as what happened in the 2007 housing and financial crisis, is that Carvana is packaging up loans and selling them as like A-plus rated loans for big bucks when they're really, really terrible, right? They're super high risk. There's a lot of subprime loans. And even one point on this paper said that Carvana has issued over $15.4 billion of asset-backed securities, which it retains partial interest in on its balance sheet. The 60-day delinquencies across its supposedly prime borrowers, the high credit people, are over four times industry averages.
There is even another point in this article that says approximately 44% of cars financed since 2022 are underwater. So negative equity, just really truth, like, where's that money coming from? Where's it going to go, I guess? And that really just goes to echo that point that they made and that you've brought up, that this all feels like the 2000s mortgage crisis, just very focused on, you know, one company.
Now, are you looking at, so is it 44% underwater? Because I'm seeing a point that says 44% says that the loans it sells are non-prime. So they're essentially not prime lending. Is 44% a coincidence? Are we seeing that twice? Or
it is, I think we might be. So I just did a search on the page and says, yeah, approximately 44% of cars financed since 2022 are underwater.
Ooh.
Per yeah. report by CarEdge in December of 24.
However, that doesn't matter if they're selling off their loans, right? So if they are holding the loans on their balance sheet, which they are doing for a lot of them, then they have significant liability. If they're selling them off, as long as their bank deals are fine, then they're fine. And one of the big sections of this research paper was basically saying, well, Ally Bank is holding a massive stake in Carvana. They're buying nearly 60% of their loans, which is huge. So if Ally's deal falls through, they're toast. And since this article came out, obviously the way that they couched it, it seemed like Ally was going to pull back from buying their loans, which would add significant risk to Carvana's balance sheet. And their stock price tumbled about, I think, 15% total. So side note, when we last talked about them in our Christmas special, their stock price was about $250 a share. And it had tumbled to just over $200 a share. I don't think it was a result of us talking about it, but I'm going to take the credit anyway. And after this research paper came out, which got far more traction than our podcast, went from about $205 a share down to $177. It is back up to around $200 a share, though, as of this filming.
What is interesting is, so I was searching some of this stuff. I wanted to know the current value. I wanted to have it ready. One of the top search results when I search for, you know, Carvana stock price, tipranks.com, in an article or a post written by Bernard Zambonian, sick name, said that he is still bullish on Carvana and now is the time to buy. In spite of all this other stuff, in spite of all the whatever, there is, I remain bullish on the company and its stock. Carvana seems on track to complete its turnaround and still has significant growth potential.
So to that point, there's two other people. Well, there's a lot of people who agree with him. One is a dealer friend of mine who will remain unnamed, but he founded a online buying website similar to Carvana that was backed by a dealership and did very well and sold out to a large dealer chain. So he understands this business model. He texted me a couple weeks ago and said, I'm done betting against Carvana, right? Oh. This is an industry person that sells way more cars than I do, that has way more experience. And he's like, no, they'll figure it out. They're basically only at a 1% market share, and they're selling their investors on, just imagine if we had 10% or 20%. Will they get there? Who knows? Don't know.
But even then, with all of the issues that are in this report that they are highlighted about, we haven't even talked yet about the quality of the vehicles they're selling or any issues, like things related to that. But all of the stuff in this report, I don't understand how you can read this, even if you take it with a grain of salt, and be like, yep, growth potential off the charts.
JP Morgan published an article shortly after this research paper in which they not only quoted Carvana, because Carvana emailed them and said, you know, we disagree. We think this is BS. They're just, you know, Hindenburg is just making stuff up. They're all false allegations. Obviously, Carvana is going to say that. They have to say that. 100%. They should say that. But JP Morgan, essentially, the gist of their article was buy the dip, which is what I tell my wife as well when she goes out to get chips at the grocery store.
That is also what I jokingly texted you when you sent the current stock price.
Well, you and JP Morgan Chase are on the same page.
I don't know. That was a joke, Doug. It's just I'm crying tears of the missed GT3s that I could have purchased if I would have put my life savings in Carvana like a year ago.
Okay. Well. I mean, you should probably just buy any stock that goes from $300 to $4, because the odds are it's either going to go to zero or the moon, right?
Way
so,
up.
You know, it's you always buy things at a huge discount. Warren Buffett says, be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful.
Yes.
So maybe that was, maybe we all should have. Regardless of our thoughts on Carvana itself, that was probably just a really good bet.
Yeah.
Because that's what single stock purchasing is gambling. Okay, however, though, we said that Hindenburg has a stake, a bias, because they are shorting Carvana. Well, JP Morgan has a bias, too. So we can't really trust what they say either. Because remember, Chase is the bank that lent Carvana $3 billion years ago to buy Odessa. So Chase is holding like half of Carvana's debt. Which is, that's a lot of money. So, can't trust anyone. However, the important part is, the reason it's good that we waited to air this, because otherwise we would have just dumped on Carvana, Ally, just a couple days ago, renewed its agreement to purchase loans from Carvana to the tune of $4 billion this year.
Is that the, so in the Hindenburg research report, they talk that Ally has significantly decreased their commitment to buy, I think $4 billion was their current amount. So did they continue at the current, or did
it
they
was
increase?
Less. They increased.
Really?
It was three and change last year. So they've committed to buy $4 billion worth of allegedly junky loans. But hey, you know, if Carvana gets that off their books, that's significant risk off of their balance sheet. And the stock price responded to that and essentially went up almost to where it was before Hindenburg published their report. So, you know, here we are back at square one.
Well, but I just, you know, we can pontificate about the future, but none of this... A lot of this report, maybe there's some bias from us because this is kind of like what we've been thinking has, not this specifically, but something smelled weird to us for a while. Like, what's going on? Like you said earlier, I just wonder, like, when does the floor fall out? Does it ever? Or does it just get so big that it doesn't fall out? And
so there's another
$4 billion is so much money.
It is. There's another quote from Warren Buffett that's one of my favorites. Because I'm anti-debt, and the whole Carvana thing is like, you know, basically, why didn't, when the stock price was way up, why didn't they just pay off their liabilities? Why didn't they clear their balance sheet of the debt? They totally could have and made themselves super solvent and super healthy. But it seems like, and this is what Hindenburg says, that the Garcia family, who holds a significant amount of stock, and other insiders are basically manipulating the books in order to enrich themselves, sell off stock, and leave the shareholders holding the bag at some point. That is their allegations. And, you know, but back to the Warren Buffett quote, when the tide goes out, you find out who's skinny dipping, right? And Carvana has done okay with this turnaround because it also happened to be at the same time that the used car market was growing.
But it is not now. There's another point in the Hindenburg report that uses the, what is it, the Mannheim Index?
Okay, yes, but that's over the last 3 years. It says prices are down, but the used car market has still been growing in the face of new car prices just burgeoning out of control. Most any used car retailer you look at over the past year and a half has had a fantastic year. We broke a record last year for units sold and gross profit. So yes, prices are down, but the market overall stabilized. Prices always historically do come down. It's just after COVID they didn't. So their gross profit's up, their sales overall are up. What happens when that reverses? What happens when these loan defaults come due? What happens when their bank deals don't go through and they still have $4 to $5 billion in debt? That's the problem. That's the problem. If they got rid of the debt, I would actually believe in them as a company. I'd be like, yeah, they're good. They're good. So I guess we'll just have to see what happens. Again, not betting on anything for the future, but the one thing I'll say probably in conclusion is I think it's now kind of a too big to fail thing, right? Mm. I'm not saying they're going to get a government bailout, but even if they did get to a position of bankruptcy, it would be a restructuring bankruptcy, and which they've already done once. It was a voluntary debt restructuring. And somebody would come along to buy them because you can't argue with their sales volume, right?
Yeah.
Those sales exist. The brand exists. The location exists. There are assets in the company. So, yes, there may be some shady stuff going on with insiders at the company, and they may be milking the company to drive up the share prices and report profits in a sketchy way to make a whole bunch of money, because there was something in here that said, like, for every dollar in profit, their share price went up $140 or something like that.
Oh,
so
yeah.
When you can have that kind of multiple based off of a little bit of accounting manipulation, like $1 in profit is $140 in our pocket because you're publicly traded. Obviously, yeah, there's a lot of temptation to do that kind of stuff. But however, back to my point, I think even if they do get found out, quote unquote, and this stuff that Hindenburg alleged is true, somebody will buy them out. They will always be around in some form or another. They're never going to just go away, right?
Well, and that's what is kind of interesting, that when companies get to this size, you know, the too big to fail, I think is it. I think it makes sense. Like they are large enough, but I think it comes down to less of the size and more of the momentum. They're moving. Dollars are changing hands. Cars are moving around. Sales are being made. There's all this stuff potentially, allegedly, maybe going on, but the ship is still going forward, and somebody's going to take advantage of that.
Correct. Correct. And I think that's what shareholders are looking at. Yeah, I was very close. For every $1 net income that Carvana reported, the company has added $139 in market capitalization.
Yeah, there's
and
a chart.
After that, with Carvana shares up 42x, Father Ernest Garcia II sold another $1.4 billion in Carvana stock. So maybe he's just shrewd. Maybe he's really good at timing. Or, I don't know, it's suspect that a convicted fraudster who's the dad of the CEO is making all this money off of amazing timing. Martha Stewart went to jail for far less. I watched her documentary. It was amazing. It was ridiculous that she even went to jail. It was a witch hunt for sure, based on the documentary anyway. Like, this seems way worse on the surface of it.
Anyway, do you want to talk about a shrewd negotiator, Doug?
Yeah, speaking of these types of deals. Oh, man, I was on Facebook this week. Somebody sent this to me, actually. I'm very sorry I don't have it up who sent it to me, but thank you to our listener who did send this over. It was a great tip. Mercedes-Benz G-Class AMG 2020, $10,000.
What? A G?
Listing.
What?
This G63 as a car for sale. Note, no title.
Oh, that's a problem.
If you know, you know.
know what? That it's been stolen? That it's some shady business?
Asking $1,000 deposit. High demand. I'll provide a VIN and all other details, but it'll cost you extra. Can what? Also ship car to you. Pickup must be at an area I choose.
Okay.
All right. When it comes to luxury vehicles, to make a statement, look no further than the Mercedes-Benz G-Wagon. Recognized worldwide as a symbol of wealth and success, the G-Wagon has an undeniable presence on the road, and the upgraded AMG G63 2023 version adds even more sport, speed, and flair.
Did they copy that from some really bad marketing?
Yeah. I don't think it's a real AMG because the rear brakes are like 6 inches.
Does it have the side pipes? Pretty sure all the...
Yes.
They might be fake, though.
It looks like an earlier one, though. Yeah. I don't know.
Either way, 10 grand, that doesn't sit right.
No title. So I messaged him. I messaged him and tried to mess with him a little bit. And I basically said, like, I don't know. What am I missing here? And, yeah.
Did it work?
Kind of. It, you know, you can never scam scammers, but... let's see. How did this go? We're going to need a little bit of editing here.
Uh-oh. Nah, it's fine. I feel like you've tried to scam a bunch of scammers in your title, or at least play with them a bit.
Play with them.
Yeah.
So I asked him what happened to the title, and I said, how much does it cost to get the VIN number? He said, it'll cost about $700.
Oh, just for the VIN?
Just for the VIN.
Does it come with a Carfax?
Maybe. Owner is dead, and we're looking forward to selling the car and send to another state.
That's very specific. Okay.
So I said, well, $700 now or when I buy the car? Now, bro, the rest you'll pay cash when you're here. So I said I'd send a truck to pick it up. I told him I use shady Russian transport brokers and that they would bring cash. He wanted me to pay for the VIN, asked me what payment method I wanted.
Cash.
Yep. Well, no, Venmo, Apple Pay, whatever, as long as I did that.
Venmo, my dude, 10 grand and put a little red van on the like message.
No, $700 just for the VIN. And he said, please, with all due respect, if this doesn't work for you, you can look for some other car on Facebook Marketplace. So,
you can look.
And
for
he
some.
Said, this is because multiple people take the VINs and use them for scams. I don't want that.
Oh, so he's like, no, somebody's going to scam.
Yeah. So then
couldn't
I said,
possibly be me.
Well, do you have any Nissan Altimas for sale? I need one of those for my baby mama.
Nice.
And he said he could find one and ask what my budget was. So I told him $500 down and that her credit score was about the same. I thought he could hook me up for an Altima.
Man, just go to Carvana, you know, man.
Because of that G-Wagon for $10,000. And he said, my cousin gives me the cars at the best prices. He links me up to buy cars from people who are broke, stranded, or in debt. So I get them way cheap.
Stranded? Does he just buy cars from somebody on the side of the highway?
Quote unquote.
Oh, nice.
In debt. I don't think he pays off their debts. He just buys the cars cash. That's why there's no title. You see Nissan Altimas for sale like this all the time. I'm not paying off the bank, but you can buy it from me for $2,500. Yeah.
Did you buy it?
No. I told him my bank wouldn't approve my loan for the G63 without a VIN. So he said, well, how much do you got right now so I can send you the VIN? He's like, I'm getting to like your personality.
Oh, who's buttering you up?
Just tell me what you can give right now and let's deal.
Isn't that one of the, didn't we talk about this in like a scammer episode? Like the urgency was something.
Urgency, flattery. Yeah.
He's like, oh, just got to be right now, man. Just send me some cash.
Yep. So anyway, I waited about 2 hours until he followed up and I was like, who is this? I think my account got hacked.
Nice.
Anyway. Yep. All sorts of scams out there. But yeah, if somebody's selling something with no title with if you know, you know. Well, yeah, we know.
Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all its forms. So forget those flappy paddles because we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick-themed shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That's nutsforsticks.com and use code SWITCHCAST.
Let's talk about importing cars and exporting, but right now importing is all the rage because the market in America is hotter than nearly anywhere else, seemingly, especially post-pandemic, post-COVID. I don't know which word I'm supposed to say or not say that will get censored or whatever by the algorithms, but whatever. Not making any political statements about it, just talking about the effect of the market, effect on the market by... You know, it is the bat disease.
I'm going to give you a parachute out of this. It is kind of crazy when I look at, because eventually the listeners will get tired of hearing about this. I'm shopping for a GT3, an old one, the cheapest one. When I look at the prices they sell for on like collecting cars and stuff over in Europe, I am like, I start salivating a little bit because they're just like, now granted, as we're going to talk about, that's not including import or anything else that it would take to get that car here. And I probably can't even get it here yet because it's not old enough, but still. Things are just more expensive in the U.S. right now, it seems.
Yes and no.
Oh,
yes,
really?
Yes and no. Okay, so I want to back up, give a little bit of intro first because, you know, that's what I have to do. Give you an anecdote from my years in the car business. And if I had a dollar for every time somebody that's not in the car business came to me and said, oh, look at what cars are going for in Dubai. It's just everybody has tons of money there. Let's just start a business sending cars over there. I'm like, there's so many reasons why this won't work. I don't have the time to explain it to everybody who comes up to me with that business proposition. But it's amazing how many times people have come to me with that type of like arbitrage that don't even do car stuff. And I'm like,
but number there's bigger so over more, there, Doug.
There's so many more so complications, customs, and politics.
No, no, we're talking about stock cars, Doug. No customs in here. Get the,
Well, just like
thank you.
The manufacturers don't want you to do it. You can't buy new cars from a dealership and send them overseas because then the manufacturer penalizes the dealership and then they'll put you on a blacklist and all sorts of different nuances to this. But anyway. But there is money to be made through this type of arbitrage, but it's typically now kind of limited, right? So in a rapidly changing market, obviously, if you're ahead of the curve, there can be significant upside. So, for example, back in like 2012, 13-ish, I think it was, the Canadian dollar was super weak. So I was buying a lot of cars from Canada and bringing them over. Well, that dried up after like 6 months because everybody else, especially the people in Canada, figured out this was happening. So they raised their prices. So there's no more spread to be made. Around the same time, I was selling a lot of Porsches to Germany. The market in Germany was crazy. They were buying up old Porsches and essentially bringing them back home. That dried up after about a year when the U.S. market went crazy. It was like the post-recession market. And between 2012 and 2015, the market on air-cooled Porsches went up approximately 400%.
God, why didn't I have money then? Why was I in high school?
Well, a lot of people didn't have money then. They all lost it in the real estate and stock market. But the people that did started buying up collector cars. And as this recovery happened, man, the prices went absolutely bonkers. But still that sell-off over to Germany dried up because all of a sudden they were coming the other way. So any of this type of, you know, currency differential or market differential arbitrage has its time and its place. It's never forever.
Do you think it's one of those things that is so short-lived that essentially by the time people are talking about it, it's already gone? It's like buying stocks or whatever else. If somebody's already telling you, if it's already up, you're
maybe,
out.
Maybe, maybe. There's been a lot of Euro cars coming over to the U.S. in the last few years. It seems like a protracted period of being able to make good money. But I won't give the spoiler alert. I'll give that when it's later. So it's not a spoiler then.
Are you alerting that there will be
conclusion at the end?
Oh, okay.
Yes, I've already come to a conclusion. I know what the conclusion is. If I don't
buckle up, everybody, we're going to have a conclusion this episode. Doesn't happen all the time, but here we go.
This was spurred. So Tyler's been looking at cars in the European market because he's been looking at a Mark 1 GT3.
Or two. Well, preferably Mark 2.
Well, but you can't import the Mark 2 yet. Yeah. right? Yeah. So and you never could. We never got the Mark One here. So that's especially exciting.
There's some good green ones too.
Yeah. Yeah, it is another thing. Europeans have way better taste, so you get some really cool specs over there as opposed to just the silver black ubiquity that's here in our market. But I've also been looking. Spoiler alert, because I'm going to Scotland in May, and I want to buy a car over there with the idea of importing it back after I'm done with it on my trip and making some money over here.
Yeah, you should find a green Mark 1 GT3, enjoy it for a little bit, and then bring it back in for me.
I'm trying. You know what I'm finding?
Huh.
All the cars I'm looking at, almost without exception, they are more money in Europe than they are here. I am completely striking out. I feel like the market is totally dried up. The Europeans are like, oh man, those greedy Americans, they're way overpaying, and the asking prices are nuts.
Well, and we are getting into the point now where, you know, 25 years ago was the year 2000. We're getting into that, the cars that a lot of us love that are in, I guess, our generation that we couldn't have. And, you know, the cars we couldn't have, I think, declined over time as the world became more homogenized in terms of car availability. But there's still some sick stuff like the Mark 1 GT3 that just never was sold here. So I'm sure they're seeing what happened with the Skylines and the Audi RS2s and all that other cool stuff. And are like, let's just raise the prices now.
Right.
They'll pay it.
Right. There's so many people into the market as a investment, as, you know, a business, that it's nearly impossible for the average person to seek out any advantage, because any car that might be importable to the US in the next 5 years, all of the dealers and speculators are already thinking about and already buying. So it's not like all of a sudden you can just import a car and nobody's thought about it and nobody's imported it. I got pretty lucky. I imported what I believe was the first Audi RS2 Avant into the US, other than ones that were here on European plates, which doesn't count. That's not fair. I had the first actual imported one, and I did pretty well on that car. I got it pretty cheap because I bought it before people were really thinking about it. But that was also kind of an under-the-radar car. I tried to do the same thing with a Honda NSX-R, and it was like, everybody in Japan's like, no, we want $400,000 because they're going up in value. I'm like, they're not up. They might be going up. They're not there yet. They are now. Yeah. But no, I looked at a bunch of stuff that I could try to import. And it was all like, man, I'm looking at Ferraris. I'm looking at Acura NSXs, Honda NSXs over there.
Yeah.
The one that I found, I was looking at some Porsches, but I didn't want to be too passe. Like, everybody's got Porsches, air-cooled Porsches, whatever. That's blah. Aston Martins, DB7s, right? I love DB7s. I was looking at DB7 Vantages the first couple of years. They're like 50, 60 grand for automatics over there.
Whoa.
You can't get 40 grand for a manual here in the U.S.
That's
now,
wild.
I think those are undervalued, but I'm like, what are they smoking? I looked at BMW Z8s
because
the first year is legal to bring over now. And supposedly those are all, you know, world cars anyway. So you could bring over a later one. You just get a compliance letter. Those are not way more, but they're more than they are here. And after you factor the import costs, like, you're behind the game and you have a gray market car. So the one car I did find so far that there was upside on, and I was $250 away, I almost won it on Collecting Cars auction, was a TVR Subaru.
Ooh, yeah. Those are pretty under the radar for, like, that's an if you know, you know kind of car amongst car enthusiasts here.
Right. So I think I would have been in it like 30K imported, landed here, and they're going between 40 and 50 on bring a trailer. So I was like, okay, almost, but I also don't know those cars super well, so I wanted to have lots of extra room for margin in case there was something I didn't know that
Are those known for being reliable?
No, they're not. This car had 30,000 miles, and it already had a complete top and bottom engine rebuild.
Wow. Like, yeah, so it's fresh.
The whole thing. So, no. No. I have found a hack, though. But this is like one
You're calling it a hack, so it's not going to be a hack, Doug.
I bought my Diablo this way, and I recently bought a GT3 RS this way. Buying U.S. market cars that have been exported to Europe and bringing them back, there's some decent price advantage there.
Is it because they don't want the U.S. spec cars in Europe?
I think it's partly just the car. There's certain cars, like more modern cars over there, like the new Porsches that everybody's paying bonkers money over sticker for. Nobody cares in Europe. Like GT3 RS 4 liters, 911 Speedsters, 911 STs are just not carrying the kind of premium over there. So the stuff that's less than 25 years old but was sent over there, and that market hasn't been inflated like it is here, that's the stuff that you can bring back. And
why don't you bring a 4 liter back then?
Buyers, because there aren't any that have been sent over there.
Oh, okay.
Right? Or very few. But the reason the advantage is there is because of the risk, right? So people in the US don't want to deal with the unknowns and the risks of bringing a car back, putting it on a container ship, dealing with customs. And I tell you what, we brought a 3.8 GT3 RS back. There was a ton of delays. It was delayed a few weeks because of holidays and stuff getting out of Europe. And then by the time it got on a ship, that was when that bridge got hit in Maryland at that port. So there's a bunch of delays there. So it ended up taking like 3 months to get the car from Europe to here when it should have taken a month and a half. Mm. So the market could change, and tying up that amount of money for a long time, you got to make sure it's really worth it. So, hence.
Well, I think, too, one of the things I wanted to ask you on this was, because I know you've done it a couple of times, you know, obviously there is an inherent risk that we have talked about a lot on this podcast about buying a car sight unseen, how you can mitigate the issues with that. I have bought multiple cars sight unseen. You just kind of got to do it when you want something interesting, cool, or you're looking for something very specific. For some reason, it feels way less comfortable to do it over an ocean than it does over a bunch of land.
Yeah, we don't have Carfax.
Yeah, right? So like, I guess, how do you, or what have you done in the past to help mitigate some of that risk?
Either buy it cheap enough so that the risk doesn't matter.
That's true.
Or use people I know and trust to vet the cars for me. So I've had inspections done. I've sent people out to look at the cars. Again, that network is a little bit harder. Everybody knows somebody in Kentucky or whatever. Not many people know people in Luxembourg or Lithuania where my Diablo came from. So that's, you know, it's a little more legwork. You got to have a few more connections. I know people that actually fly over to Europe and just go car hunting, and it works really well for them. I don't see that there's much upside anymore. I think that market has dried up because so many people are doing it. I remember last couple years, I had multiple clients importing Ferrari 550 Maranellos and 456s because there was this disparity in the market.
Yeah, they were super cheap for Euro spec cars.
Super cheap. And now, like, not. I look at them over there and I'm like, man, they're all just the same price. One of the worst examples was I found this gorgeous silver on red Ferrari 348 Spider.
Ooh.
And I was like, that would be awesome. It was $140,000 US over in Europe.
Wow.
I'm like, I could buy a Berlinetta for $100,000 here, and that's worth more than the Spider. So,
wow.
I think that market has dried up. But here's my conclusion. The spoiler alert, that's not a spoiler alert because you came with us the whole journey to get here. If you have a niche that you understand and you know the market on, you will still be able to find a margin somewhere. It's all about sticking to what you know. For example, when I bid on this TVR, some guy called me from the U.S. that saw me bidding. He's like, hey, do you want one? I'm like, no, I don't want one in the U.S. The whole point was to buy one over there and drive it. And he's like, basically, I've sold all the ones that have sold on Bring a Trailer. I import them from overseas, and I know that market. So it's like, me just dabbling in the TVR has found the one guy that's bringing them all over. So he's got that market on lock. He knows what he knows, and he's figured out a market. So, you know, if you can figure out where there's disparity, or you know a car that you know the market over there, you know it here, and you can find a pocket there, great. But it's got to be what you know. But just looking at the market as a whole, kind of blanket, 500-foot flyover, there's not much love in the spread from European market to U.S. market. So I'm coming up dry, but if anyone wants to sell me a 2000 Z8 cheap in Europe in a cool color, I'm your guy. So we got to do the ever-popular license plate guessing game. People love this. They keep sending me submissions. Sorry, you have to find your own, Tyler.
What I think is funny is my girlfriend told me today, she's like, you've got me like hyper-focused on license plates now. She will text me when she arrives places, like, I saw this plate. Unfortunately, nothing from her will be, there wasn't anything that really stuck out to me, but it's, she's like looking at every plate that passes by because of this silly game.
Yes. I just follow the Vanity Plates of Maine Instagram page, and there's no filter on the ones from Maine, so you get some real good ones.
All right, I've got two. You usually have more than I do.
I've got four. The first one is an Ohio plate that I saw in person. TRN2ERN. I believe it's train to earn, not turn to earn. Train to earn, probably a coach, business coach, train sales coach, earn. Something like that. One of these 10X people.
That is on a Chrysler 300.
Ooh. Well, right idea.
Yes.
Right idea. It was on a Ford Fusion. So basically, Yeah.
If I can get the right idea with these, I'm counting that as a win.
I got totally judgy, though. I feel like that was equivalent to having Jeep Killer on the Bronco Sport. Right? I'm like, if you're training somebody to earn, you better be driving a friggin' Mercedes S-Class or something like that. Like, show me you know how to earn.
Fusions are fine, I guess, but they're fine.
A Ford Fusion and it's probably on payments. I'm not taking your advice. I'm not hating on anyone that has car payments or drives a Ford Fusion, but
yes,
you know.
Lots of.
I'm trying not to be offensive, but listen, if you're fat, I'm not taking fitness advice from you. I thought that plate was kind of ironic. Okay, what do you got?
I've got Unsafe. I found this on the internet.
Nissan Altima.
No, it is on a Corvair.
Gosh darn it. Oh, yes. Exactly. That's a good one.
I like that a lot.
Yes, Unsafe at Any Speed. Ralph Nader. Yeah. Okay, that's a great one. That's a great... somebody driving a Nissan Altima would not have that kind of self-awareness.
And honestly, they'd be driving too fast down the highway with a donut on two opposite wheels that I wouldn't even be able to see it. That's fine. This came from the internet, though.
All right, here's one from Vanity Plates of Maine.
I love it.
LOL, you mad?
Oh, I feel like I saw this, but I don't remember what it's on. Is it on like a? Is it on like an F-150?
No, it's on a BMW 3 Series that has as many body panels missing as most Nissan Altimas.
What are they mad about then? mad about all their mismatched body panels?
The road rage that happened right before this damage, probably.
The next one I've got is a Florida plate that is NOMOWK. So no mo work.
No mo work.
Work. Yeah,
that's kinda... it's a retired person, probably. Was it on a golf cart?
No, it wasn't. Okay. This was on a car.
All right. First guess. Cadillac.
No, but kind of right idea. This was on a Jag XJL.
Ooh.
From like the big old long guys from like the mid 2010s. Mm,
maybe if they had done more work, they could have had it on a real luxury car.
Yeah. Yeesh.
Another one from Maine. Vampire.
Oh, that's got to be on like a...
This isn't a trick.
No, I'm trying to think of like what type of van though. Like it's probably somebody who's a van enthusiast. So it's probably some like GMC van with a custom paint job.
No.
Oh.
Toyota Sienna.
I thought way too
with
hard
with lots
about that.
Of bumper stickers. Including Port Con, whatever that is. Something probably to do with vampires. All right, yeah, one last one. I love this one. You'll never get this. Another one from Vanity of Maine. HV2 poop. Have to poop. <That's>... I told you there's no filter there.
I don't know. Honda Accord.
No. Lexus LS 430.
At least they can poop in style.
It should have been on a Toyota TRD. Because Toyota turd, we always call them Toyota Tundra turd, have to poop. They missed an opportunity.
I need to get the Ohio version of that plate. Let's go.
This episode is brought to you by Sheffield All Sport Watches. The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jay Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield All Sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one in July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid back in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine. Get yours at SheffieldWatches.com and mention that you heard about them on Switchcast. One of our favorite segments is the Wall of Shame, where we look at kind of ridiculous reviews that people have given dealerships that were not warranted and kind of make fun back at the customers, right? Because dealerships don't get to review customers, but often the negative reviews from the customers are totally warranted. And so we picked out a few dealerships that had pretty abysmal overall ratings averages, right? So, when I look at hotels, right, I will not stay in a hotel that's below about like a 4.2.
Yeah. And for restaurants, you told me the like 4.5 hack. That's like, if it's below, if a restaurant is below 4.5, iffy. It's not right. It's not that it's bad.
3.5 on Yelp, because Yelp is just really unkind typically. But and you can't really leave fake reviews on Yelp, right? Google, there's tons and tons of manipulation to the reviews, and there's a lot of bot positive reviews for any number of places. But yeah, the difference between like 4.2 and 3.8 in hotels is the one stars. And the one stars in a 4.2 are like, well, you know, the person was rude to me at the front desk. And like, they didn't have an extra cot. And a 3.9, the one stars are like, yeah, our whole family got bed bugs and bacterial meningitis. Like that 0.3 is massive. Right? So averages matter. So we picked out a few dealerships that have, we didn't look at the Google averages, although typically they were pretty low, although some of them appeared to have manipulated them. We went to Yelp and or cars.com and looked at their averages. And they weren't even close to four. No. Not even in the ballpark. They would have loved to be at four. All three of them together might have been like five stars, like total. Like totaled up. Yes. Nice. Yes. One of them, cars.com review average is 1.4 out of 5.
How many?
And it looks like 53 reviews.
That's a lot.
And it looks like half of the five stars. It appears, I am alleging, it is my opinion, that most of the five stars are not legitimate. They had all the markers of kind of super wordy and non-specific. And I'm just like,
Well, I've got, so in one of, I don't want to get necessarily into the reviews just yet, but to that point, from one of the places I looked at on their Google reviews, I have, I looked at, here's a terrible review. One star, absolutely awful. The next one, five stars. Management was very good and respectful. Customer service was excellent. I went there with a friend to purchase a car and saw some really great vehicles. Like, what is that? A picture of a couple Rolls Royces on here. It's like, right. What is?
I think a lot of people for $10 will go look at a fancy car dealership and write them a review, right? Because all these are high-end car dealers. So the first one I stumbled across was Atlanta Fine Cars. in, well, Georgia. And I came across him because I was looking at comps for Aston Martin DB9s. And they have an 06 DB9 Volante with 177,000 miles.
What?
Right?
That's incredible.
I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, that's pretty cool just to have one with that kind of miles. So then I saw their 1.4 and I was just like, okay, okay.
Maybe. Well, that's the place that I looked at the closest. Let me tell you, there's probably some issues with that vehicle. If any of these reviews are to be believed, that was probably totaled at one point.
Yep. All right. Let's get right into them. Car dealer sold my money. The goons had to show up.
What?
The goons had to buy goons. That's who wrote the reviews, goons. The goons had to show up to get my money back. They sold me a Porsche 996. I gave them $5,000 down payment of Friday. They said the car would be ready on Tuesday. I returned on Tuesday to pay the balance, and the car was gone, and the salesman gave me a stupid and directed me to the owner. This guy starts running all over the lot, avoiding me for an hour. The sales guy comes over to he sold the car the next day to someone else for $7,000 more. I was over it at this point. I just demanded my money back. The owner said, oh, I done. I think it means I don't. I don't have $5,000 at the dealership. I have to go to the bank to get it. I waited an hour and he went MIA. To get my $5,000, it required some outside persuasion from some motivation from some neighborhood associates. Goons LLC.
Neighborhood associates.
Once they had a conversation with the owner, he was eager to return my money. The lesion here is don't do business with these guy, and if you do, you nay gave to hire Goons LLC to get justice.
That's amazing. Goons LLC.
Oh my goodness. I wonder if they if you have to get a W-9 from them, what their corporate structure is.
There was one that, now this one I want to give, you know, so they say, drove 4 hours to get down there, purchased a Range Rover Sport. They told me it was a reliable car and everything was fine with it.
It's a Range Rover. That's your first mistake.
Drove it for 30 minutes and the check engine light came on and my front light went out. They have good service, but terrible cars. My advice is to take the car to a mechanic before you purchase it.
My advice is don't buy a Range Rover.
Check engine light in 30 minutes. I feel like that's pretty legit. It wasn't in 15.
Well, it probably means it had been reset, and that was just the time it took for it to cycle back through and then come on again. All right, here's a good one. Same company. Lied is the title of the review. This company is not a good company to work with. I missed a couple payment. Well, that's
unfortunate.
It's not a good start. Never had that problem with car dealerships. And instead of just repo, they lied and told people in my apartment building that I stole the car and wrote bad checks for the down payment.
Why were they scoping out people in the apartment complex? Did they hire Goons LLC? They're like, man, these guys are really effective. Let's go.
Yeah, I don't think Goons LLC discriminates on the client.
Money's still green.
In fact, I gave them $6,000 in cash. Horrible business. True to lie to the police about it. Thank God the police officers checked their database and seen that it wasn't stolen, so they let me go free.
Let me go.
Oh, man.
Oh, my goodness. I do love the bought an M3 here in March for $14,000 cash. Turned out to be a lemon, and I sold it for just $4,500. Not even 6 months later. Avoid this place if you need a car that runs. Which is like, why else are you buying a car?
All right, let's give them some credit. Let's look at a 5-star review. Highly professional staff, top of the line exotic automobiles, large selection of automobiles to choose from. No lines. Is there lines at a car dealership? No waiting customer service. Good store operational hours.
Ah, thank goodness they've got hours. You know, another 5-star.
Do you think that's a real review? Is it your opinion?
No. Not even a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no lines. Thank God I didn't have to wait in a queue. Like, what are you talking about? Another positive one, though, if we want to keep this going, S. Levere, in parentheses, son of God, wrote this
review. Oh, yes, this is a good one. This is a good one. I had this one, too, but this is yours. Go for it.
Ollie and the whole staff are the best. I didn't all of the down payment, and I still drove off the lot with my BMW 645 CI. I wanted a very costly tune-up and didn't have all the money, and he still worked with me. They are the best. I recommend everyone go see them. Tell them I sent you. That was the first period. And I guarantee 100 emoji that they will take care of you. Heart emoji, smiling emoji, heart emoji.
Oh, that wasn't the one I was thinking of.
This was amazing.
This is a great one. This is a 5-star that I think the guy had a spiritual experience and changed it.
Oh.
Sorry, it was a 1-star. It is now a 5-star. You'll see why. Title of the review is, Want God Do It! Multiple exclamation points.
Nice.
Anthony Brown, I'm a man of God, and it doesn't matter what happened in your life. Just remember this. The Bible said, rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee. Leave there thy gift before the altar and go thy way first. Be reconciled to thy brother and then come and offer thy gift.
If you could hear my thoughts right now, it's just the dial-up sound, like trying to process what the heck is going on over here.
This is not a bot review. I gave the owner my apology for a bad post because I can always say yes and no to any deal. It's true. But I said yes, so I'm at fault too. So stop posting bad reviews when you didn't do your homework. We are friends now, and I won't carry anger in my heart for no man. I want to go to heaven. What about you? Thanks, Ollie. I got another vehicle, and I'm all right.
Glad you're okay there, bud. I will admit,
I have different convictions.
Some of these reviews some of the people that left these reviews should have watched a couple of our videos about how to buy a car.
They should have probably watched a couple of Dave Ramsey's videos
or
about
that.
How to pay cash. Buy here, pay here, exotic car lot, luxury car lot is not a great start.
No.
If you are buying a Range Rover with no credit check, it probably means that they didn't do no mechanical check either.
Yeah. It's just...
Yes. Yes. Okay. Another one. Let's look at a few from Cario Motor Cars. The reason I say this is because I had a customer fly down to look at a Gallardo Spider that they had there that was advertised as a 6-speed gated manual. Now, there's no description. They didn't say outright it was a factory 6-speed manual, but it seemed that they weren't saying that it wasn't a factory manual. And of course, a lot of people do conversions. They start with a E-gear, the F1 gearbox, the, sequential manual with the paddle shifts, which, functions as an automatic. But anyway, the conversions to an actual manual are not as valuable as the factory manuals, but not always can you tell. So I messaged them to ask if it was a factory manual gearbox, and they said yes. And so I pushed them on it, and they're like, well, call me. I'm like, heck no, I want this in writing. So I kept messaging them. We started texting, and they kept coming back with, it's a factory manual. So I took a screenshot, which I had gotten. This is a plug for Epic VIN. If you are not using Epic VIN to do homework or due diligence on a vehicle, you are not doing due diligence. It is way cheaper than Carfax, and it is awesome because you can look up historical listings, different salvage auction results, whatever. Click the affiliate link in the show notes to sign up for Epic VIN. It's $40 a month for unlimited reports. That's the price of one Carfax report. Anyway.
Oh, dang.
Yeah. I don't know how we ever did without it in our business. I've been a subscriber for a long time, long before we had an affiliate link. So wholeheartedly endorse him. Anyway, so I pulled up some photos from prior. The car used to be a rental in Las Vegas, which is never a good start for a Lamborghini. There was a VinWiki post about it being a paperweight because it had a rod thrown through the block, right? So the engine had to be rebuilt at some point, and it was an E-gear. So I sent the salesperson at Cario Motor Cars the screenshot of like, hey, here's the interior. You can see the paddle shifters. This car used to be an E-gear. And he's like, no, I don't think that's the same car. So what? I sent him another screenshot that I had taken from their website where you could see the paddle shifters and the reverse button. And I was like, how about this one? And he's like, oh, I don't know. No, it's a factory manual. I was like, I'll wire you money right now if it's a factory manual. So he sent me wiring instructions and then quickly was like, no, actually, I found out it is a conversion. Somebody else told me, one of the other salesmen. I'm like, this is like 2 weeks of me anyway. Wow. So they were, seemed like they were trying to pass it off as a factory manual and probably still. But anyway. What do you got for reviews on Cario Motor Cars?
Well, I love this 5-star right here that is just unbelievable selection of exotic vehicles and a bunch of posts of cars from inventory. How is that?
They do. I mean, they have like a Bugatti Chiron per sang there. They do have a great selection. But they also have a 2.2 average review on Yelp.
And it's a 3.6 on Google, which, as we have discussed, below the 3.8 line, things get a little
four. It's dicey. Below four, it's dicey. Yeah.
Oh, man. There was one, I have scrolled way past it here, but essentially they bought a McLaren. It's like when you buy a Range Rover and then it gets a check engine light. If you're going to buy a McLaren, sometimes things are just going to happen.
Yes.
They're just finicky. But they bought all this stuff. Turns out to be tuned. Bad ECU. Had to do all this thing and the dealership just ghosted them afterwards. Absolutely nothing.
In the dealership's defense, there's a thing you sign that says as is.
That's
right?
True.
Like, when does the car stop being their car and start being the buyer's car? But the question is, was it misrepresented or not? Here's a good one from Cario. Horrible dealership scammers. I cannot believe the nightmare I've had with Cario Motor Cars. They sold me a car with tampered miles without even disclosing it. Well, that's usually what you do if you're messing with the miles, is you don't disclose it. You know, just this is absolutely unacceptable and fraudulent. After discovering this shocking issue, I reached out to Jack Weinzier from Channel 10 to investigate the dealership, and I'm now involving my attorney to ensure justice is served.
Ooh,
yeah, that's some crazy allegations right there. I purchased a car through them and they charged me $10,000 more than the price was suggested on their website.
Yeah.
Double check the documents before you sign.
There's one here, another 5-star. I'm feeling very positive tonight, I guess. I want to send a special thank you to Jordan and the whole Cario team for being such great partners. I've waited 30 plus years to find my dream car, and Cario had a gorgeous 2018 BMW M3. Now, I don't know math very well, Doug. I let computers do it for me. But 2025 minus 2018 is not 30. Seems a little sketchy.
Well, 2018 minus 30 is a year that the BMW M3 didn't exist.
Ah, so
there's
also
some better math
that's
for you.
It. Wow, I thought I had shown me up. That's why he's in charge. Pay this guy the big bucks.
I've also heard from Dan, the normal car guy, supercar guy, whatever it is. Sorry. Anyway, nice guy. He kind of exposed Cario a while back. He had bought a car from them or tried to buy a car from them, sent them a deposit, and they sold the car to somebody else and then tried to keep his deposit.
Oh.
But he showed numerous examples of when they had Gallardos that were dressed up as Superleggeras that they were allegedly trying to pass off as real Superleggeras that weren't. They just had like the wing and the graphics and stuff.
I mean, you know, everybody likes to up badge and act like they got more than they got. They're just trying to take a slice of that pie.
It's one thing when you're going for Instagram likes. It's another thing when you're trying to profit off of
that. That's
true.
Are you telling me clout is not profit, Doug? I don't understand. Why do I even have Instagram?
You could get a few bucks from Meta, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, yes.
There's a lot of crazy stuff. The one person left a 1-star review because they purchased a car and then the car got stolen.
That's not the dealership's point. What the heck? Oh, man. Well, here's one. We don't know who this dealership is, but we'll end on this one. This is just a wacko. This is for, it's for Patria Auto Sales, who has a 4.8-star review with 2,000 reviews. So we think this one is probably a wall of shame because it makes no sense. It definitely is. It's a Nissan Altima. Here we go.
Let's go.
1-star, Sherry Brown. Notice the review section just got car. I bet they were led into the 5-star system. Ha ha. I'll be back today. 10-9-24, something spooky. Jason, try sign your life away. No longer work there. And this morning, three people acted as if they were talking to a 3-year-old. I feel like I'm reading what a 3-year-old wrote. I'm older than all three and hung up in my ear emoji. The fourth in sales tried to follow I suit, but I had other plans. I am the radio queen of Virginia. Not only that, I have a voice. I'm also an avtivist, and my mentality is tired of being played with. I have moral standards, respect, integrity, wit, and a responsibility to inform people and this world about people's lies and disrespect to God's people. And I will never... Why does God keep coming into these
deals? Weird. God's not buying a car.
No. No. I will never again let no one, as long as I live, endure the pain, lost inhumane things I have in the 48 years I've lived. 48 is in quotes. So I...
Can you...
You know, maybe what? She's 60 and 48. Thus far, would not ever treat someone indifferent for dollars. GJ Dividends at all, Jason, asked me to hit 5 stars before I sign my... paperwork in quotes. I told him at the beginning, you moving and talking a little too fast. And guess what? No one can really out talk me or write me. I feel they always tell me, shut up, be quiet, and sit down because I was born with discernment. Can't spell it. And also, I'm a medium. So with that, I'll be back because I have to study. I hope everyone enjoys their day and use good judgment. And then post 3 pictures of her Altima. With a license plate, vanity plate here. We should have used this one for the game. Jay saves.
Which Jay are they talking about?
Not Jason. She's really mad at Jason, but probably Jesus. Yeah.
Saves that Altima.
Oh, man. There's so many more, but we'll stop there in the interest of time. That brings us to the props and flops of the week.
And as always, the props and flops are brought to you by Switch Cars. Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, and consign only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and mention SwitchCast for special pricing. Find more information on the internet at switchcars.com or come visit our showroom in beautiful and extremely snowy Twinsburg, Ohio. Doug, do we have a pick of the week?
We do. 2010 Shelby GT500 convertible. Ooh. Black on black with 32,000 miles and nicely priced bargain performance convertible. $35,000. I had to think about that one.
Nice.
Flop of the week. Speaking of Mustangs, a Mustang tries to run from the cops. I saw this video on the social medias. It was one of those like Insta 360 cams that people put behind their cars as if they think people care about watching them drive. Anyway, the Mustang gets pulled over by the cops, takes off, and spins out within about 200 feet.
Nice.
All caught on camera. Oh. So the cop just like moved up and pulled up with him like backwards this time. The irony was there was in this video all sorts of other performance cars, and you could see in the back window of the Jaguar that was filming this, thanks to their Insta 360 whatever cam, they had an LED thing that was scrolling that said, "Wanna race?"
Oh, well, that's very obvious.
Yep. So think I know what that Mustang was trying to do, but it was ended up doing Mustang things. Prop of the week, the Porsche Carrera GT recall is in. The fix is in. If you didn't know, Porsche Carrera GT had a stop drive order. There was a recall as part of the front suspension that it could potentially crack. But according to this article I found, it was only as a result of being exposed to salt, essentially, if it was corroded, which I don't know how many people with Carrera GTs drive them in salty roads. But anyway, if it was inspected and found to be compromised, there was a stop drive order. People couldn't drive them. I was really hoping that the market would tank on them and I could afford one. It didn't. Unfortunately, it just dipped kind of like Carvana stock. And then people bought the dip. And yeah, anyway. So a year and a half later, the fix is in. Porsche's addressing it. And bonus, you get a brand new set of Michelin Pilot Sport N2 tires with this recall. So you can drive your Carrera GT safely on fresh rubber and you won't have a Paul Walker moment.
Ethan, get me out of this.
Listen, it's a real thing. Old tires on performance cars is not, it's no bueno. It's no bueno.
My guess is that's why they're giving out the tires. Just get the cars in. Take a look at them, especially because dealerships aren't really servicing it this much anymore. You know, the expertise is elsewhere, but they can ensure that people are incentivized to get fresh set of tires.
I think it's an avoid liability thing, a CYA moment. So, well, with that, I guess I'm priced out of Carrera GTs, but I'm at least happy that people are safe and have them back on the road. Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.